The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting here at our beautiful Edstone campus. Lots of ongoing work. Of course, school is back in session, but we still have quite a lot of activity with respect to work as well. We're working away on our new set, our TV set up here adjacent to the radio booth. Hopefully we'll be taping in that that new setup here in the next few days, and you'll see that maybe this next week or a couple of weeks from now. You'll see the new background. Also, we've got some exciting packs coming up, public appearance campaigns in Belfast in Northern Ireland here this weekend. We've got a Saturday night lecture and then a Sunday early afternoon lecture, so a lot compressed into about an 18, 19, 20-hour time span there. That'll be in Belfast. My father's heading over to Tampa in Florida, so he has a two-day event Sunday night, this Sunday night, and Monday evening. So you've got Saturday night in Belfast, Sunday afternoon in Belfast, and then Sunday evening in Tampa, Florida, and then Monday evening. So you'll hear a lot about those campaigns next week. Hopefully, like we did in London with ours, we can also get some behind-the-scenes work done over the weekend and play a little bit of that for you on Monday's program a week from now. So lots to be thinking about, lots to be praying about if you're a supporter of this work, whether a full-fledged member in the church or a coworker or donor. We certainly do need everyone's enthusiastic support in this this end time that we're living in. This morning in my Epistles of Paul class, we went through Acts chapter 8, this history with Simon Magus and the establishment of the great false church, the great counterfeit. Satan was right there at the very beginning of church history to create his counterfeit, his version of Christianity. And you should read through Acts 8. I'll read a couple of verses here in just a second. But you study through that chapter, and then in particular, look through the second chapter of my father's book, The True History of God's True Church. There's a section in particular on page 22 about demons. About demons. Let me just read to you what it says in Acts 8, verse 6. It says, "And the people with one accord," these are the people in Samaria, "the people with one accord gave heed unto those things which Philip spoke, hearing and seeing the miracles which he did." It says, "For unclean spirits," that would be demons, "crying with loud voice, came out of many that were possessed with them, and many taken with palsies," it says, "and that were lame were healed," and that those who were lame were healed, it says, "and then there was great joy in that city." So this is what Philip and the disciples encountered when they took the true gospel into the land of Samaria, where this Simon was situated, Simon Magus. They encountered people, a lot of people, that were possessed by demons. This was a region that was demon infested. This was a region where a lot of people were being bothered and heavily influenced by demons, even possessed by them. And God backed Philip here and the other disciples, and he drove the demons away. In my father's book, it says, "Today, ministers in most churches rarely discuss Satan and demonic possession. They hardly even mention Satan and his powerful demons. No wonder this world is so easy to deceive." You can see that in Revelation 12 and verse 9. Of course, another memory verse, 2 Corinthians 4:4. speaks of the devil as the god of this world, the whole world deceived. Well, here are all these demons in Acts 8, a demon-infested area. And the point that my father makes in that section, page 22 of the church history book, is that those demons from Samaria, Satan and those demons, they're still here today. They're still on this earth. In fact, if you understand what Revelation 12 is saying, you know that it's even worse today. Because Satan and his demons are now confined to this earth. They're confined to the boundaries of this earth. And they're still working away. They're harassing. They're influencing. They're deceiving. And in some cases, they're possessing people on this earth. You can see in verse 11, speaking of Simon Magus, it says that of a long time, Simon had bewitched them with sorceries, all kinds of witchcraft and idolatry. They were bewitched by this man of religion, by this man who saw the apostles and said, well, I want that power that you have to lay hands upon people, to baptize brethren, to bring them into the true church. He tried to buy that position. He wanted to buy the Holy Spirit. And Peter said to him, I perceive that you're going to be like a cancer or a poison that spreads over this earth. And it certainly has happened. Here was this impressive man, just looking at it on the surface. He got quite a large following there in Samaria. They looked at him as if he was God in the flesh, this Simon Magus. My father writes, look at the impact Simon Magus had on the Samaritans. And then he asks, do you really understand the power that Satan has? This is why it's so important that we stay on our knees, trying to get as close to God as possible, because we have a powerful, powerful enemy. Go back and look at that chapter, the entire chapter. That section on demons is especially good, but the whole chapter, going through that history from the first century. And then think about what we're going against today. Think about what God's people are going against today. Think about what our nations, the nations of Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh, think about what they're going up against today. On Friday's program, you can look at that or find it at the trumpet.com website. You can always listen to these shows later. There's the live stream for many of you, but there's also the podcast that's posted 3 or 4 hours after we have the live show. But Friday's program was America's biggest problem is not the radical left. That's not our biggest problem. As my father says in Great Again, ultimately, this isn't about a man or an administration. It's about an evil spirit being who's working to destroy this nation, speaking of the United States. He's working to destroy the United States. He's attacking America. He's attacking Britain. He's attacking us from within and from without. And while the radical left is not America's biggest problem, it certainly is a big problem. And Satan certainly is using. He's using that movement, that progressive movement, that radical leftist movement to destroy. In the Saving America article from last May, my father said, Satan is marshaling every tool and weapon he can to wreck this nation. And he's having alarming success. It says this evil spiritual power is influencing the radical left. And he says most Republicans don't realize what they're dealing with. Most of them don't realize it. They don't realize just how much Satan is using that radical left. There's really only one person who fully sees it, well, certainly not to the extent that we in God's church do, but if you look at the American government, only one man sees just how evil this is. He sees the lies behind it. He sees the abuse of power. He sees the hoax. He sees the witch hunt. You may have seen clips from the weekend. All these Democrats, of course, were still in the midst of the partial government shutdown. And here you have something like 30 Democrats down in Puerto Rico for the weekend, having fun in the sun. They're going to see the Hamilton stage production. It's a big party. All these Democrats, they brought their families down there. They're staying in a resort, a seaside resort, where rooms go for about $450 a night. The group that hosted it, Bold PAC, it's a PAC, they sent a 737 to Washington to bring, this is a chartered plane, to take all these Democrats and their family members down to this resort for the weekend. And they're there with 109 lobbyists. There's the lobbyists from Washington, and then there's the Democrats, and then the big party. And meanwhile, the government shutdown continues. And lots of people, as the Democrats continually remind us, whenever they have an opportunity, they're not getting their paychecks. But these ones, well, they're down there partying away. Imagine for a moment the reaction in the media. If after Donald Trump and the Democrats, they come out of a negotiating room and they can't reach an agreement, so the government shutdown sets in, and then Donald Trump, imagine if President Trump were to take off and have some fun in the sun while this partial shutdown of the government was going on. Well, as the president himself was tweeting out over the weekend, look, I'm here. I'm still here at the White House. I'm ready to get this moving. If the roles were reversed, I thought this was interesting. This is the Bold PAC chair rep, Tony Cardenas. He made a statement. They've gotten some flack from conservative media for partying down there while the shutdown continues. And his statement, his response, is that House Democrats voted to open the government multiple times. Sadly, Senate Republicans and President Trump are continuing to put partisan politics ahead of our country, forcing the government to remain shut down. Well, it's the country that voted for Donald Trump in 2016, and I think it's safe to say that a lot of people voted for him because of his promise to build a wall. And so now he wants to build it, and they won't let him. They won't let him. $5.7 billion, it's like pennies compared to what they spend. It's a tiny, tiny fraction of what they spend. Billions, tens of billions wasted away every single year. But for this project, they're not going to let it happen. It's the president's opponents that are going against the will of the people. There was another story this weekend from the Wall Street Journal with the headline that the White House sought options to strike Iran. And here again, this is even in the Wall Street Journal. This isn't the Washington Post or the New York Times. But it says here, President Trump's National Security Council asked the Pentagon to provide the White House with military options to strike Iran last year, generating concern at the Pentagon and the State Department. Current and former U.S. officials said, here's another article that's meant to convey a message that the president is unstable. He's unhinged. He's wanting to blow up the world. He's picking fights with everyone. But listen to the detail here. And most people don't even read to this point because they just look at the headline. Oh, he wants to blow up a country. Great. This is our president. It says the request, which hasn't been previously reported, came after militants fired three mortars into Baghdad's sprawling diplomatic quarter, home to the U.S. Embassy, on a warm night in early September. The shells, launched by a group aligned with Iran, landed in an open lot and harmed no one. So he was responding to these missiles, three of them, which landed right near the U.S. Embassy. Iran firing these missiles. And so he goes to the Pentagon and says, look, what kind of options do we have to answer back? This seems like fairly normal activity for a United States president. How many times in history has the president asked the Pentagon, what kind of options do we have here? Can we answer this response? Can we answer this threat? It says here in the Wall Street Journal, but they triggered his seeking options. They triggered unusual alarm in Washington, where Mr. Trump's national security team, led by John Bolton, conducted a series of meetings to discuss a forceful U.S. response, including what many saw as the unusual request for options to strike Iran. Why is it so unusual, I wonder? It's because of who the president is, that's why. It's definitely rattled people, a former senior U.S. administration official said of the request. People were shocked. It was mind-boggling how cavalier they were about hitting Iran. Here's more leaks. Here's more unidentified officials. He says Mr. Bolton's request reflects the administration's more confrontational approach toward Tehran. It's the president who's confrontational because he asked about options. It's Iran that's confrontational, the number one state sponsor of terrorism. Presidents, if they weren't asking this, they should have been asking this years ago. The Obama administration, the Bush administration. Well, the truth is, they probably were at times. But here's yet another leak intended to generate a headline that says this is a president who's unstable. This is a president. He's going to blow up Tehran. This is who we have in the White House. He's under siege. His presidency, it's constant. Look at the latest bombshell, this story from the New York Times that came out Friday night, right at the end of last week. Yet another blockbuster report saying that when the White House, when President Trump fired James Comey on May 9th, 2017, that the FBI formally opened an investigation into Donald Trump. President Trump was the target of the investigation. Why? Because he fired James Comey. Now, this article, listen to this, it says, in the days after President Trump fired James B. Comey as FBI director, law enforcement officials became so concerned by the president's behavior that they began investigating whether he had been working on behalf of Russia against American interests. According to former law enforcement officials and others with the investigation, so more anonymous sources saying that the FBI became so concerned. That's the measuring stick now for whether or not they can investigate into the president of the United States. If they're just concerned, that's all that it takes. Nothing about probable cause or evidence or reasonable suspicion. They were just a little bit concerned here. And you know some of the history. We've gone through this before on this program, how that Rod Rosenstein, he was the one that recommended that Comey be fired. And then who can forget all of the Democrats and those in the media that were calling for Comey's head after he ruined Hillary Clinton's chances?
Comey acted in an outrageous way. I think he should take a hard look at what he has done. And I think it would not be a bad thing for the American people if he did step down. And
finally, do you believe that Jim Comey should resign, Senator Reid? course.
Did you want to see him gone?
So it's absolutely true that Democrats have been very critical of James Comey, and many of us did call for his resignation.
It's hard to be a director of such an important institution when that trust is no longer there.
Can you tell us anything about your discussion?
No, it's classified, and we can't tell you anything. All I can tell you is the FBI director has no credibility.
That's just a one sampling there, a little montage. How quickly we forget. I think, though, that the what's so revealing about this, and I touched on this a couple weeks back, but if you have the top law enforcement official in the land, I guess he would have been under Sessions, but Sessions recused himself. So you had Rod Rosenstein. He's at the DOJ. He's drafting a letter giving all of these reasons, including quotes from previous attorneys general, giving all these quotes, calling for Comey's firing. And the president, it took 5 months. Now, he said later he wished he would have done it sooner. But it's shocking that he wasn't fired earlier, given the way that he handled the Clinton investigation. And then you look at the attack, the setup, that January 6th meeting setup, leaking the information about the dossier, and then the Obama administration expanding their surveillance powers and expanding the powers of all these agencies to share that information. All of that happening in the weeks before President Trump was inaugurated. And then everything that happened after the inauguration. Comey's visits with the president. And then him putting together or drafting these secret memos that he then took with him when he left, when he was fired. And then leaked to the New York Times. All of that. And yet, we're told here in the New York Times now that what was so concerning revolving around that firing in May of 2017, it was President Trump's actions. It was President Trump's behavior. This Times piece, this is from late Friday night. It says, the inquiry carried explosive implications. Counterintelligence investigators had to consider whether the president's own actions constituted a possible threat to national security. Agents also sought to determine whether Mr. Trump was knowingly working for Russia or had unwittingly fallen under Moscow's influence. He's either doing it knowingly or unknowingly. They're basically saying he's guilty of treason. Newt Gingrich, he's had some strong things to say in recent months about the so-called deep state. But he said over the weekend just how extraordinary this story is and what it reveals about this deeply sick Washington establishment. He said a group of bureaucrats elected by no one sat in a room and decided they would investigate the new president of the United States for possible treason. He says, let me repeat, treason. This is what those bureaucrats decided. And of course, at that time, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, they're all in play. They're all still working there. They would move on. In the case of Peter Strzok, they'd move on to assist Bob Mueller. Until he saw just how biased, he was so biased, Peter Strzok, that Bob Mueller had to fire him. So this is the cast of characters. They had it in for Donald Trump before he was ever elected, and it's still going, and all this talk of obstruction, and these investigations just continue. And they come out, and they reveal themselves. Unwittingly, these reports, these leaks. As John Dowd said, he used to be the attorney for President Trump. But he said in this report from Friday night, it's an unwitting disclosure and verification of just how utterly corrupt these government agents are. Or as Newt Gingrich said, they're unelected bureaucrats. Not one of them is elected. And here they are suspecting the President of the United States of treason. It says the investigation the FBI opened into Mr. Trump also had a criminal aspect. which has long been publicly known, whether his firing of Mr. Comey constituted obstruction of justice. But you see, with Rosenstein suggesting it, admonishing him, urging him to fire Comey, to me, this was all part of the setup. It was like that meeting in January of 2017, set up by Obama and Clapper and Comey and Brennan. And then now you have Rosenstein who's saying, look, just fire him, go ahead, fire him. And then he fires him. And you have these same investigative agencies saying, what does this mean? This is cause for grave concern. We became so concerned that we opened up an investigation into Donald Trump specifically. In truth, of course, they were investigating him from the start. But they were pretending that it was a counterintelligence investigation or that it involved some of these bit players like Carter Page and Papadopoulos and so on. They had it in for Trump, though, from the beginning. And as Andy McCarthy said over the weekend, this revelation, if you can really even call it a revelation, is just pointing out when they came out and within the agency said, all right, he is officially a target. You'll recall Comey all through those months, his final months, he kept telling President Trump, you're not a target. You're not a target. So much corruption, abuse of power at the very highest levels of the DOJ and the FBI. The Times said agents and senior FBI officials had grown suspicious of Mr. Trump's ties to Russia during the 2016 campaign, but held off on opening an investigation into him, the people said, in part because they were uncertain how to proceed with an inquiry of such sensitivity and magnitude. In fact, they were already using the dossier. The dossier accuses Donald Trump of being a Russian agent. So this is the document they were taking into those FISA courts so that they could spy on the Trump campaign. But go back to the language in this New York Times piece. They became concerned. They had grown suspicious. You get the idea. Listen to this paragraph. It says the special counsel, Robert Mueller, took over the inquiry into Mr. Trump when he was appointed days after FBI officials opened it. The criminal counterintelligence elements were coupled together into one investigation, former law enforcement officials said in interviews in recent weeks, because if Mr. Trump had ousted the head of the FBI to impede or even end the Russia investigation, that was both a possible crime and a national security concern. If he did this, it's possible it's a crime, and it could be concerning. And it goes on to point out, the cloud of the Russia investigation has hung over Mr. Trump since even before he took office. That cloud, it's hanging over this administration. It's been manufactured by his enemies. His enemies in the Democrat Party, his enemies in the media. You hear them talk a lot about the president manufacturing a crisis. That's all that this is, this investigation. They've manufactured a crisis. They manufactured the Russia-Trump collusion narrative. They manufactured the obstruction of justice. They've manufactured all of this. It says Mr. Trump had caught the attention of FBI counterintelligence agents when he called on Russia during a campaign news conference in July 2016 to hack into the emails of his opponent, Hillary Clinton. So the joke that the candidate said during that election year, that's taken with all seriousness. Grave seriousness, you see. Mr. Trump had refused to criticize Russia on the campaign trail, praising President Vladimir Putin. And investigators had watched with alarm as the Republican Party softened its convention platform on the Ukraine crisis in a way that seemed to benefit Russia. Well, we've had some comments before about some of those statements that Donald Trump made about Vladimir Putin, that cold-blooded killer. But just look at President Obama and the dealings he had with Iran coming into... We went through the Cairo speech last week and some of the things that he said about the new beginning and all of the division, all of the strife that was there between the United States and Tehran for going on 3 decades. And he came forward in 2009 to say, that's all in the past. Now we're going to negotiate without preconditions. And this didn't concern anyone in the Department of Justice. It did not concern anyone in the FBI. Not one person. Certainly not enough to start an investigation. What is he doing with the number one state sponsor of terrorism? And as for saying nice things about Vladimir Putin, which politicians in the Democrat Party are not guilty of that? You go back to the start of the Obama administration, the infamous reset button, and on it goes. When we come back, we'll look at the conclusion to this article and then tie it back into what I said at the start about Satan and the demons and their fingerprints being all over this. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Just one more bit from this this New York Times article that came out Friday evening last week. This is following the firing of James Comey, May 9th, 2017, and the supposed actions that concerned investigators in the FBI. It says here, the first was a letter Mr. Trump wanted to send to Mr. Comey about his firing, but never did, in which he mentioned the Russian investigation. It says, in the letter, Mr. Trump thanked Mr. Comey for previously telling him he was not a subject of the FBI's Russia investigation. So it explains how that, I guess this letter was given to Rod Rosenstein, who wanted that taken out, and he wanted the president to just focus in on Jim Comey's poor handling of the Clinton investigation. But then Mr. Trump wanted that statement put in there. It says in the Times piece, he disregarded the president's order. Let me just back up. Mr. Comey's poor handling of the Clinton email investigation would suffice as a fireable offense, he explained. Mr. Trump directed Mr. Rosenstein to mention the Russia investigation anyway. He disregarded the president's order, irritating Mr. Trump. The president ultimately added a reference to the Russia investigation to note he had delivered, thanking Mr. Comey for telling him three times that he was not under investigation. He wanted that put in there as a reminder. Three times you told me I wasn't the target of this investigation. And now we know that he was. So obvious. Andrew McCarthy probably has been on that as well as anyone. Proving it. Proving what was going on in those crucial 40 or 50 days before Donald Trump was inaugurated. He had a response, by the way, to this New York Times piece. And the basic point that he makes is that, look, Donald Trump has been the subject of this investigation, all of these investigations, from the very beginning. He says we have to remember, listen to this history. Again, people forget, even though it's just a couple years old. McCarthy says the FBI believed the Steele dossier, the collection of faux intelligence reports compiled by former British spy Christopher Steele, who was ultimately working for the Hillary Clinton campaign. The Justice Department, on four occasions, Rosenstein, he signed one of them, on four occasions brought surveillance applications to the FISA court in which the FBI swore that it believed the dossier allegations. This was something created by a Hillary Clinton operative starting in June of 2016. And the FBI and the DOJ, they believed it from the very beginning. They used that document in court so that they could get the warrant to spy. It says, ostensibly the surveillance application targeted Carter Page, but Page was just a side issue. The dossier was principally about Trump. Listen to this. The dossier is about Trump, not Page, not Manafort, not Cohen, but Donald Trump. It says the dossier's main allegation was that Trump was in an espionage conspiracy with Russia to swing the election to Trump, after which Trump would do Putin's bidding from the White House. The dossier accuses Donald Trump of treason. It accuses him of treason. Now we're just reading, and of course it's been thoroughly discredited, but then you read here's another New York Times bombshell, Friday night, and they can't help themselves. They unwittingly reveal all of their corruption, all of these abuses of power. Doesn't even take that much digging, really. You just have to go back and be reminded and put some of these dots together. It says further on, the investigation was always hoping to find something on Trump. That is why, for example, when Director Comey briefed then-President-elect Trump about the Steele dossier, he told Trump only about the salacious allegation involving prostitutes in a Moscow hotel. He did not tell the president-elect either that the main thrust of the dossier was Trump's purported espionage conspiracy with the Kremlin. He just told him about the salacious details with the prostitutes and such. And he repeatedly told him in those final months, you're not a target. You're not a target. Nothing to worry about for you. Well, then he wrote all the memos and leaked those memos after his firing because, as he's admitted, he was hoping it would trigger a special investigation, a special counsel, and it surely did. Comey working together with Rosenstein, Andy McCabe, Bob Mueller. I think it was in Newt Gingrich's piece where he talked about, and I'm not sure where he gets this figure, but it says in a Justice Department where employees gave 97% of their presidential campaign contributions to Hillary Clinton, you guessed it, the hostility toward and the fear of newly elected President Trump was deep. Deep, deep hostility and fear within the deep state. toward Donald Trump. Over the weekend, the president, as he often does, he responded to that Friday night story with a bit of a Twitter tirade Saturday morning. He talked about the New York Times in one tweet and the corrupt former leaders at the FBI and how that they opened up this investigation into him. He says everybody wanted James Comey fired, Republican and Democrat alike. I played that montage for you already. He's pointing out the obvious. He said the FBI was in complete turmoil because of Comey's poor leadership and the way he handled the Clinton mess. My firing of James Comey was a great day for America. He said further on that he's being protected by Mueller and the 13 angry Democrats on Mueller's team. Leaking machines, he called them. Leaking machines! They have no interest in going after the real collusion between the Clinton campaign, the DNC, and the Russians. And the British in some cases, and the Australians in some cases. And notice the New York Times response to these tweets. It says, President Trump on Saturday unleashed an extended assault. Notice the language here. And compare it to the one that was in the Friday night bombshell. In this case, it's an assault. An assault on the FBI and the special counsel's investigation, knitting together a comprehensive alternative story in which he had been framed by disgraced losers at the Bureau's highest levels. It says, in a two-hour span, starting at 7 a.m., the president made a series of false claims. So he's lying in his tweets. He accused Hillary Clinton, it says, without evidence, of breaking the law by lying to the FBI. He claimed that Mr. Comey was corrupt and best friends with the special counsel. He said Mr. Mueller was employing a team of Democrats. Another misleading assertion. So in this case, the New York Times, it knows. It knows exactly what the truth is. It knows exactly where the lies are. And here, the way that it frames the entire investigation brought on by these angry opponents of Donald Trump's in the FBI, they talk about how that they were just concerned. They were concerned. This is what the president's going up against. This group of bureaucrats, to use the Newt Gingrich's language, elected by no one, sitting around a table in a boardroom or some kind of meeting room somewhere, deciding that, well, we think he's guilty of treason, and so we're going to go after him. I want to read to you a quote from my father's Saving America article. This is from last May. He said, Merriam-Webster defines treason as the offense of attempting by overt acts to overthrow the government of the state. My father said, you don't have to know a lot about government to know that attempting to remove a lawfully elected president from office using unverified propaganda is treason of the highest level. You see, they're guilty of what they say the president's guilty of. He says, corrupt law enforcement officials led by Barack Obama and with the help of Hillary Clinton conspired to overthrow the government of the United States, duly elected by a majority, winning the Electoral College, rather easily, in fact. And as I said, one of his talking points out on the campaign trail, it had to do with the wall, building the wall. I've played a few of these excerpts before, but this is in a discussion. John Solomon, he's being interviewed by Buck Sexton. I think there might be another gal as part of this exchange. But listen to what the president, or at least what they say the president said about what he would consider his crowning achievement to be. Here's clip two.
He said, I hope to be able to put this up as one of my crowning achievements that I was able to, through the help of a lot of good people, expose something that is truly a cancer in our country.
Cancer.
Strong words from the president about the chief law enforcement agency of the United States.
Yeah, it was.
That was Buck Sexton and then John Solomon there, the last bit. But for most of that clip, it was Buck Sexton. They were talking about their interview with the president and how that the president told them, this was a few months ago, he told them that his crowning achievement would be to expose this cancer that's there in the deep state, that's there in the DOJ, in the intelligence community, the FBI. Notice what they went on to say in this same discussion, clip three.
It was clear to me he feels personally strongly that the FBI engaged in misconduct. He had no problem looking at Russia. He said, I got nothing to hide, but he really felt like they had created a ruse. He called it a hoax. He escalated. He's been calling it a witch hunt.
Now
it's a hoax. And I think these text messages, he said, the reason this case fell apart was not so much by documents, but by text messages.
So that's something that, again, he's seeing what's happening. He's seeing this unravel. He's seeing them be exposed. Those text messages, so condemning. So that's why they tried to destroy the remaining lot of them. Well, they didn't try, they did it. Because the ones that were revealed, they were bad enough. Exposing this angry, obsessive, violent bias in the FBI. One final bit from that same discussion, clip four.
When we were leaving, he said something just as we were closing up shop, that if it could happen to me, it can happen to just about anyone in America. And that's what makes me concerned about this. That's why I want transparency. He used the word transparency at the end. That was his end goal. I thought that was interesting. If it can happen to me, it can happen to anyone. I think that's what motivates him.
He said there, that was Solomon at the end. What motivates him to fight back and to expose this is that if it can happen to me like this, then it can happen to you. And he's doing it for the everyday, average, ordinary Americans. It says in Saving America, that article from last year, if corrupt agents can withhold vital intelligence from the president and even spy on him, what can they do to you? My father made that point 7-8 months ago. And then the president made it just a few months ago as well. Right after that last clip I played, they asked him about, in the course of their interview, they asked him about the term deep state. And the president said that he didn't really like that term. He prefers to use the word cabal, this cabal of leaders, this cabal at the top, the DOJ, the FBI, all of these agencies that had it in for him. Corruption at the top. This is a point my father makes in America Under Attack. That's what Satan targets. That's what he targeted in the Worldwide Church of God. You can look on the inside cover jacket of the book, Raising the Ruins, where it says Herbert Armstrong was one of the world's leading televangelists and one of the most prominent religious leaders of the 20th century. But his legacy, it says, of Bible-based humanitarianism came under attack after he died. The cabal of leaders who took control of the church he founded after pledging to follow in his footsteps methodically destroyed all that he had built. There was this cabal at the top. This cabal that came forward with these outrageous lies, these outrageous accusations. Here again, think of Samaria. Think of a charismatic Simon Magus bewitching the people. Think of all of this demonic activity. And then consider what happens. What happens when someone stands up to that and exposes it? Well, he's going to make himself to be quite the target. Listen to what Donald Trump said in an exchange with reporters. I think this was from two or three weeks ago. Clip five.
Well, then it's probably presidential harassment, and we know how to handle that. I think I handle that better than anybody. And there's been no collusion. After 2 years, no collusion. There has been collusion, but it's been by the Democrats. But there's been no collusion. And you're talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars of wasted money. There's been absolutely no collusion. But there has been a lot of collusion by the Democrats with Russia and with a lot of other people that maybe they shouldn't have been dealing with, including very dishonest people.
So that's him, again, turning the light back on them. Here's where the real collusion is. In the Great Again book, my father says that we must know our enemy in order to understand what is going on in America. You can look at, again, chapter 2 of the True History of God's True Church booklet. You read a lot there about our enemy, and you can understand what's happening. You can understand it better. We've seen it happen before, as I say, in church history. Revelation 12 in verse 1, it says, "And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she being with child cried, travailing in birth, and pained to be delivered." So here is the devil, and he's ready to attack. He was ready to attack the moment Jesus Christ was born. He was ready to snuff out the movement before it even got started. And he was working the same way in the lead up to the 2016 election. Verse 3 says, "And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great dragon having 7 heads, 10 horns. So here is the Holy Roman Empire, this other woman. If you read the church history book, you see this constant battle between God's true church, the little flock, and this great universal organism. It says in verse 4, "And his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered for to devour her child as soon as it was born." As soon as it was born, the dragon was ready to devour. Same with Moses. As soon as he was born, ready to devour. Satan would love to snuff it out at the very, very beginning. That doesn't mean, though, once it does grow, that he leaves us. He constantly went after Jesus Christ, all the way up through to the end. Verse 6, it says, "And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared of God." And then verse 7, "And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not. Neither was their place found any more in heaven." So they have no more place, no more freedom to roam in heaven. Now they're confined. Now they're confined to this earth. And what are they doing? Those demons that infested Samaria in the first century, those demons that Philip encountered in Samaria, they're still around. It says in Great Again, "America's being attacked from within and without. There are failures everywhere, economically, culturally, politically, militarily, morally." Anyone who says there isn't a real problem here needs to open his eyes. We need to see what's happening to our nation. Well, that's when he goes on to say the radical left is not our big problem. Ultimately, it's about this real spirit world. Verse 9 says, "And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." They were cast out, and now they're confined to this earth. This is an end time prophecy. And you see, if your eyes are open, you can see those fingerprints all over the place, the fingerprints coming from the devil. It says, therefore rejoice, verse 12, you heavens and you that dwell in them, woe unto the inhabitants of the earth. The heavens can rejoice, but God says to the inhabitants of the earth, woe unto you, for the devil has come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. There's the hope. He knows his time is about up. He knows that Jesus Christ's return is imminent. He knows that his work of deception is about to come to an end. But until that does, we have to brace ourselves for more battles as we go about our job of exposing the devil. When you do that, you make yourself a pretty big target, which is why, as my father says, I gave you the quote at the start, we have to draw closer to God for protection, for help, and for power. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.